Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Acts, where we've been following the Apostle Paul's ministry in the area of Athens. And as we continue this study, we'll be looking at the subject of salvation to the city as he dialogues with the intellectuals in the area of Mars Hill. So let's listen and turn in our Bibles to Acts chapter 17, verse 22, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So as we continue to follow the Apostle Paul, we have arrived in the city of Athens. And in our previous study, we talked a bit about Paul's experience in Athens. We talked about what Paul saw in Athens. Paul saw things that the average person wouldn't have seen. The average person would have been there more or less as a tourist and taking in all of the grand sights and things, but we saw how Paul, he really centered in on the spiritual condition of the city. And what Paul saw was the idolatry that the people were steeped in. And we saw how he was moved by that, how he was actually enraged, and how he was desirous to do something to change the direction of that place. And so we saw that he began to reason with the people wherever he could. He began to reason, first of all, in the synagogue, as was his normal procedure when he would go into a community where there was a synagogue. So he started there. And then he went from there into the marketplace. And we saw that the marketplace was really the kind of place where people were just there and looking for something to talk about. And Paul took advantage of those opportunities. And we talked a bit about how there are places today where we can also reason with people, and we ought to seek out those opportunities. And so we continue to follow Paul in this story here, and we pick up with Paul now being brought to the place known as Mars Hill, the place where the sort of academic council of the community would sit and hear different philosophies and different theories and different things like that. And so Paul's been brought to this place that he might explain to them the message that he's been sharing with people in the marketplace and the message that he shared in the synagogue. And so that's where we pick up the story in the 22nd verse of chapter 17. But remember this, keep this in mind, that Paul, in his reasoning with them in the marketplace, he had preached to them Jesus and the resurrection. So Paul was communicating the gospel message as he had done in each and every place where he had gone. And he hadn't really changed the message. He wasn't seeking to alter his message because of the environment that he was in. He didn't, compromise at all. He held fast and proclaimed that same message that he had been proclaiming everywhere, the message of Jesus and the resurrection. And so it says in verse 22, then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus, and he said, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you." So this is how Paul begins to speak to these men here. Now, this place, Mars Hill, or the Areopagus, as it says here, same term. This was perhaps the equivalent today of the university or the public square, that place where ideas are debated, that place where, ideologies are even formed and sort of developed and, discussed back and forth. So a similar situation presently would probably be the university environment or that aspect of society that those types of people would go to beyond the university itself. John Stott, in his commentary on the book of Acts, kind of taking off on this note here, referring to the need really to see a Christian influence in the area of academia, see a Christian influence in the culture in general, and in that part of the culture where thoughts are developed and they begin to sort of trickle down from there to the general populace. He said this, and let me quote to you from his commentary. He said, "There is an urgent need for more Christian thinkers who will dedicate their minds to Christ, not only as lecturers, but also as authors, journalists, dramatists, and broadcasters, as television script writers, producers, and personalities, and as artists and actors who use a variety of art forms in which to communicate the gospel." I agree with him, with one reservation. But let's first talk about the agreement, and then we'll get to the reservation. Part of the problem, really, in our situation today here in our culture, goes back to something that happened in sort of the early to mid part of the last century. And what happened back then is Christians sort of just vacated the public square. Christians just, sort of went on a retreat and pulled out of a lot of different areas, influential areas of the culture. And to some degree, what we have today is a result of that. Now, what happened back then is there was a great attack against the scriptures, and the Christians just sort of felt that, let's just forget the world, let's leave it behind, let's cloister together, let's just, sort of isolate ourselves and insulate ourselves against this sinful world that we live in. And so people began to think in terms of, well, it's not really right for a Christian to be in politics. It's not really right for a Christian to be in entertainment. It's not really proper for Christians to be involved in the arts and things like that. Those areas that have such a tremendous impact on the culture, Christians pulled out of that. And of course, as the Christians pulled out, it just opened up the opportunity for anyone and everyone else to come in with their ideology and begin to, you know, spread that. And that is, to some degree, why we're in the place that we're in today. I mean, why is it that the majority of people in the media are opposed to the things of God? Why is it that their bias is against the church and against Jesus Christ? And why is it that they espouse humanistic and atheistic ideas? Christians pulled out. Now, there are a few Christians that have found their way back in, and thank God for them. But I do agree with John Stott here that it would be good to see more and more people getting back into these areas, the universities. Oh, how desperately we need Christian people on university campuses. Christian people, they're as part of the faculty of the universities throughout our country so that they might influence the next generation that's coming up to lead the nation. How desperately we need that. But sometimes, you know, the thinking is that, oh, that's worldly. That's, you know, that's the flesh. That's, you know, we don't want to go in that direction. And we need to see, I believe, a revival in this area of people getting involved in these types of places and seeking to be an influence there. I mean, after all, these institutions, they're here to stay, it seems. And they certainly are the ones who are having a tremendous impact upon the culture. And so why not seek to influence it from the inside? Now, I said that I agreed with Stott, but I did have a reservation. And my reservation is this, that I don't want to overstate it either. And I think that, you know, there can be that danger of putting too much of an emphasis on, you know, how we need to produce, you know, Christian thinkers and, you know, journalists and authors and those kinds of things. I mean, yes, I agree, but on the other hand, we have to balance it out with the fact that God has already told us in advance that he has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and that to a large degree, God bypasses that part of the world. You know, that is a reality, because God resists the proud and he gives grace to the humble. And in these areas, what you generally find are self-sufficient, prideful people. And we already know that God has an inclination toward bypassing those who are prideful. So I think what we have to be careful about doing is going again to another extreme and developing this mentality, which I think has crept into some of the churches today. As I've mentioned this before, you know, it is just a fact. We seem to swing from extreme to extreme. The pendulum never seems to settle in the center. It's always at one extreme or the other. So we want to strike the balance. And I think simply it comes down to each person individually needs to understand the call of God upon their life and pursue that call, wherever that call might take them. And I do believe that God would call people into these arenas and take them there. But we must not make the mistake of thinking that unless we infiltrate the media, unless we infiltrate the government, unless, you know, we're in there on that level, that we're hopeless and helpless, because that certainly isn't true. Because God is able to work. And historically speaking, God has many times worked powerfully, mightily, despite the lack of influence in those areas, just by touching the common people, so to speak, in a general sense. The great revivals that occurred in Britain back in the 1700s under the ministries of John Wesley and George Whitefield. John Wesley, his ministry was predominantly to the working class people. But so many people were impacted by his ministry that it changed the course of the nation. You couldn't have that many people transformed without it changing the course of the nation. So we want to be wise, and we want to consider all areas of life as possible areas of service to the Lord and ministry, but we don't want to go to one extreme or the other. We want to strike that Holy Spirit balance. That's really the key, just being in tune with the Spirit and letting the Spirit lead us. And so Paul, here he is in this environment, this highly intellectual and cultured environment here. And so he begins to speak to these that are gathered, and he's going to speak to them about the unknown God. Now they had, as he mentioned, he had been passing through the city and he saw an altar that was dedicated to the unknown God. So he said, "Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing him, I proclaim to you." Now, what Paul is going to do here, which I think is good and wise, Paul is going to seek to connect with these people where they're at. Paul's approach in the synagogue would have been drastically different than his approach was here on Mars Hill. In the synagogue, Paul is going to be speaking to people who are very familiar with the biblical truths and with biblical history and so forth. So, of course, he's going to start with the scriptures, and he's going to bring his message to them from a place that they could comprehend. When he was in the marketplace, he would adapt it there to suit those people within the marketplace. And I think that's just good common sense as we're ministering to people. Paul spoke of seeking to become all things to all men. And he realized that some people you could say certain things to and it would draw them in. But if you said other things to them, it would just, you know, have no impact on them at all because they didn't really have any background into that or any capability of really understanding your starting point. And I think this is wise. As we seek to minister to people ourselves, we do want to find a place of relating to them. We want to find that place where we can connect with them and begin our witness from that common point there. And that's what Paul does. So, "Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing him, I proclaim to you." And now he introduces them to God the Creator. "God who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things." A good place to start. And you know, our culture today, to some extent, would have some similarities to this audience that Paul was addressing here in Athens. Because today in our culture, just God, just if you go out and talk about God, there are so many diverse concepts of God, people no longer today know what you're talking about. Now, 100 years ago, in this country especially, if you went out and talked about God, there wasn't any question about who you were talking about. You were talking about the God of the Bible. You were talking about the God and Father of Jesus Christ. But that is not true today. That is not what comes into the minds of people when you mention God necessarily. Francis Schaeffer, many years ago, he stated that the time had come when we could no longer just simply talk about God to people. We had to define who it is that we're talking about. And boy, that is becoming more and more the case all the time, isn't it? Now there's all kinds of attempts to sort of blur the distinctions between, say, the God of the Bible and the God of the Quran and the God of Hinduism and all of the rest of it. So Paul, he takes them back to that place, a good place to start. God the Creator, God who made the world and everything in it. Now, what Paul is going to seek to show them is that this whole idolatrous thing that they're steeped in is foolish. And he's going to do that by laying before them who God really is and seeking to show them that this is not the proper means of worshiping God. These idols are not representations of God. In actuality, the idols degrade God and bring a wrong concept of God to us. And so he says he's not worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. You see, among the idolatrous systems, the idea was that, you know, God needed man to satisfy him in some way, shape, or form. And in all of the different sacrifices and the activity that the people would go through, those were all means of placating God in some way, shape, or form, bringing some sort of fulfillment to him or some, you know, meeting some need that God had. But Paul says, no, the true God, the God who made heaven and earth, he doesn't need anything. It's not like he is dependent on us in any way for any reason whatsoever. The Lord declared that clearly in the 50th Psalm, because the children of Israel evidently began to think something like that as well. They thought that this whole sacrificial system and everything was something that, you know, God needed them to do for him, to fulfill some void in his own being or something like that. And the Lord went on to declare to them that he said, if I were hungry, I wouldn't ask you to give me something to eat. Because don't you realize I own the earth and everything in it? The cattle on 1,000 hills, they belong to me. God was showing them, look, I'm not asking you to sacrifice because I need anything. And that's what Paul is saying to them here. And then he says in verse 26, and he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As also some of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. So, now Paul does something here that is interesting. Paul, in his presentation, he quotes to them from their own poets, as he reminds them here. Now, some people have been really bothered by the fact that Paul quoted from these poets, and some others have been really impressed by the fact that Paul quoted from the poets. Some have said, oh, Paul was a true intellectual. Look at this. Cultured man, quoting the poets. Every one of us, that's what we need to do to reach our, you know, society. We've got to become cultured. But then others have said, oh, I can't, what was Paul thinking? What, quoting the poets of his day? I think that either one of those responses are the wrong response. Paul was just connecting with people. We do it all the time. You might quote from a song, not because you believe the song was inspired by God, but because the song illustrates the point that you're making. You might quote from a commercial, not because you believe that the advertisers are inspired by God with their commercials, but because that particular commercial illustrates what you're saying. You might quote from a philosopher. You might quote from some politician or something like that, not because you think that what they're saying is equal to what God is saying, but you're just seeking to connect. That's what an illustration is. An illustration serves to connect with people. And that's simply what Paul is doing here. He's wanting to connect with them. And I don't find any fault with Paul here. I think that what he's doing is what we all ought to do in those kinds of situations as we find ourselves, as I mentioned a moment ago, in different types of encounters with people, and we begin to understand where the people are coming from. we want to seek a point of common ground with them where we can connect.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of Acts in our next lesson as we follow the Apostle Paul's message to the intellectuals of Athens, and we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Salvation to the City. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT3132. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian, or subscribe to our podcasts and vodcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.